This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Pearl Harbor-themed episode as we mark the 78th anniversary of that date which has lived in infamy. We continue now with the memories of George Coburn, who was on the battleship USS Oklahoma on December 7th, 1941.
That morning, while I was in the plotting room, I heard the public address system was keyed open, and I could hear a hiss and a little background noise, and then this voice came up and said, "All hands, man your battle stations." And then he came back and said, "Real planes, real bombs, no shit." And it was an officer who said that. And later he explained that he knew that enlisted men used no shit as an exclamation and to emphasize a point, and he wanted to emphasize the real planes, real bombs, but it worked backward, because I heard that and I thought, geez, that doesn't belong on a public address system. This must be a bogus announcement total. And I went over to the next compartment. There was an electrician there, and I asked him what he thought about it, and he says, some drunk probably got back from Liberty and found the access to the PA system, decided to have a little fun. A more authoritative voice came up on the PA system and made the standard call to battle stations and also set off the general alarm. And so I started for my battle station. I made a detour to go to the shop and get a shirt out of my locker, because you didn't go topside without a shirt in those days. My battle station was in the anti-aircraft director, and so I had a lot of climbing to do to get up there. And the Navy had a rule for everything, and traffic control was you move forward and up on the starboard side and aft and down on the port side. But they had another rule, and that was in the event of an air raid, all unengaged personnel go below the second deck, which was an armored deck. So I got to the up ladder, and they were sending people down, and I couldn't get up. I never got to my battle station. When the last man cleared the hatch, they slammed it down and dogged it down tight from up above. And so there were probably, about 20 men in this little area where the ladder, they were all people who had topside battle stations, and of course nobody got there. The first torpedo hit, and the deck jumped, and it was a little bit more of a shock than when the main battery went off. But we weren't unaccustomed to explosions, because we had gunnery practice fairly often. And anyway, the lights went out, more torpedoes hit the ship. I've heard all kinds of numbers on how many there were, and I didn't try to count them, so I can't argue with them.
Is that the first time that it was really real to you, though, when you felt the impact of that first torpedo? Is that when you first knew that this was real and this was war?
Yeah, I would guess that was probably the beginning of realization that we got a problem here. Mm-hmm. One of the things that happened was a source of oil got ruptured, and we got sprayed with fuel oil, and the deck got covered with fuel oil. And because of that, and the ship was beginning to list, people couldn't stand up. It wound up that a pool of oil formed against the low side bulkhead, and men were slipping into that pool and just wallowing around in oil down there. I've thought many times, if they just thought about it, they'd have figured out how to get the heck out of there, but they didn't. As far as I know, they probably perished. Somebody showed up with a flashlight, and that was a big help. It helped the guys that were up on the ladder and trying to get the hatch open. It helped them a lot because they were using their fists and or anything they could find to try to hammer the dogs from their tight position. And well, they finally got it open, and everybody rushed for the ladder, and the darn thing broke. I don't know just what happened, but either some fitting came loose or the pin that secured the top of the ladder sheared, because had a lot of men on the ladder, and the deck was over maybe 45 degrees by then, and somebody had the good sense to yell, "Everybody get the hell off the ladder or nobody will get out of here, it'll break." And so the people complied with that, and then we went up one by one, and I don't know whether everybody got out or not, but we got up to the second deck and then on up to the main deck, and there was probably 10 of us together at that time. And I looked back, the normal exit from the ship would be out onto the quarter deck, and that was about maybe 100 feet away. There was a big group of men back there. It didn't appear to be moving. And besides, there was all kinds of gear and lockers and bunks and everything that was loose or jarred loose by the explosions had slid down against the bulkhead, and we would have had to crawl or make our way over that stuff in order to get back to the weather deck. I saw an open porthole. Shouldn't have been open. We were at general quarters. If it had been closed, I probably wouldn't even thought of trying to get out a porthole. But I decided that's for me. I went, crawled up across whatever was available to get a handhold on, and a few fellows followed me. Some of them went and started going back to the weather deck. And anyway, six of us got out of that porthole, and at the time, the side of the ship was easy to stand on because ship had rolled over far enough to where it wasn't level yet, but it was close to it. And some of the things I should have mentioned. When we were down in the fourth deck and torpedoes were hitting, and we had the light from a flashlight, but no more. Some of the guys were yelling, and some were cursing, and some were praying. And I'll always remember one voice that called for Mama to come and help. He called repeatedly, "Mama, come and help me." And he was in the pool of oil. And,
well, what about you? I mean, you're describing this. I know you're a 22-year-old young man at the time. You didn't know this was going to happen. This came completely out of the blue. I mean, it sounds absolutely terrifying. Did you feel that fear? Was there panic? How did you handle it?
I didn't feel any fear or panic, but I think I was in shock. It isn't hard to remember, because I'll remember this the most hours for forever. I don't know. It's.
And I know there are a lot of other details here, but if you hadn't seen that open porthole, what do you think would have happened to you?
I probably would have died in the ship. Linda has told me repeatedly, says, "You're both lucky and smart." She said, you made a lot of good decisions to get out of the ship, and you also were lucky to find, to have the avenues available to get out.
Pearl Harbor survivor George Coburn was referring to his friend Linda Dudick there. She's done remarkable work in preserving the stories of World War II veterans in the North County area of San Diego. She's the one who introduced us to George, and shortly after he shared his story here in April of this year, Linda's efforts led to George finally receiving the medals he had never gotten during World War II, including the Purple Heart. You can link to an article about that at hometownheroesradio.com. And the final Pearl Harbor survivor we hear from today is 98-year-old Stu Headley, who is back at Pearl Harbor this week thanks to the Best Defense Foundation, the nonprofit headed by former NFL linebacker Donnie Edwards that took five survivors back to Oahu this week. Stu Headley was a 20-year-old aboard the battleship West Virginia on December 7th, 1941.
When I reached for my hat, I got kicked right in the seat of the pants by a first-class bosun mate, Hicks. "Get to your battle station on the double. This is the real thing." I grabbed my hat and ran on top sight. Planes are diving from every direction. And similar to this, a gun sets up off the deck. Mm-hmm. And it's all open underneath. I saw this pilot, Lieutenant White, shooting with his .45. Well, I dove under there with him. Now, I'm a seaman first class. He's a lieutenant commander, so I'm not going to question. But I'm thinking. And he says, "Son, where's your battle station?" And I put it up to gun three. He says, "Get up there as fast as you can." As I was going up the ladder to get in the turret, here come a Japanese torpedo plane down the port side. I could see the pilot, the radioman, and the co-pilot laughing like everything. I got inside the turret, and Crosen was already in the trainer's seat. Nobody was up on the gun deck, no shellman or rammers or anybody. So I went down to my battle station. When I go out to the schools, I put on a little demonstration. I point out how the Lord protected me. When I was 9 years old, I used to like to sit in the chair and lean back on the back two legs. My dad only spoke twice. Third time he acted, "And you, yes, sir, and no, sir," in our house. Mm-hmm. So I was in the kitchen, and I'm leaning back on the back two legs. My dad walked in. "Stuart, they made four legs and a chair to sit on the floor." "Yes, sir." But how quick a 9-year-old forgets. So next time I'm leaning back, my dad says, "Stuart, I'll not tell you again." "Yes, sir." In this ear and out that ear. So the next time I'm leaning back, my dad walked in the kitchen, kicked the bag leg out from underneath me. I cracked my head on the floor. I said, "There's got to be a better way." Now you see my legs back up under. That's 9 years old, a habit that I learned. I'm now 20 years old, and I'm in my battle station. Normally, my feet would be on a platform. I would be bent over cranking in the dials for the elevation that they want that gun raised.
And this is a big 16-inch gun.
16-inch cannon.
How big are the projectiles in that?
It stands 5'2". It's 16 inches in diameter. They weigh 2,700 pounds. I called it a Volkswagen going out the barrel. And it takes five 100-pound bags of black powder to hurl that shell from San Diego to Oceanside. Uh-huh. That is, if I've got that gun elevated to maximum height, that shell will fly 30 miles.
I just wanted people to have a sense of this isn't a little anti-aircraft gun. This the biggest you got.
So now I'm in my battle position, but we're not going to fire these 16-inch guns in Pearl. We'll blow Pearl Harbor off the map.
Yeah.
And so consequently, my feet were back up underneath me. I'm on a high stool. No back. J.A. phones on. And we could hear the machine gun bullets hitting the turret. We felt the thud of a torpedo. And Crosby says, "Stu, let's see what's going on." We took the sight cap off our periscope, and bam, there went the Arizona. And I estimated there were about 32 bodies that flew through the atmosphere.
So I want people to understand what you're saying here, because very few people actually saw the Arizona
explode.
They saw the aftermath. They saw the smoke, or they heard it and they turned.
We saw it.
When you looked into this viewfinder right before the bomb hit.
And see, I immediately thought that a bomb went down this stack because it looked like the ship broke in half. When I met this fellow here, I found out the truth. Jack McCarran was one that was blown off the ship into the burning oil. But he later informed me that he had been informed that an armor-piercing shell went through the starboard side of the forecastle right into number one handling room. There's 1,000 bags of black powder in each one of the handling rooms. That exploded. That set off turret two. That's what broke the ship in half.
But you're a 20-year-old kid.
I'm a 20-year-old brat growing up overnight.
And you're looking at a ship just like yours, another battleship.
Yep.
Blowing up and bodies flying through the air.
Yep.
How do you react to that?
Startled, surprised, but waiting for the next scenario.
And we'll hear about that next scenario when this special Pearl Harbor edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.